Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. That was This Bike Is a Pipe Bomb with Murderbike. Before that, They Might Be Giants, Dig My Grave. And again, started off with the Ohio Players and Hoochie Coo. I want to play some more music for you, but I also want to spend some time tonight reading from a book called Rebel Radio. It's the story of El Salvador's Radio Venceremos, the pirate combat radio station that accompanied the FMLN during the long civil war in El Salvador. So stay tuned for some readings from Radio Rebelde. Was a race against the clock. It went on air on the 1st of January and burned out on the 2nd. Since we barely had 10 days left, we sent an urgent message to San Salvador, and on the 9th, Mauricio, the technician, showed up. He arrived like one of the three kings, carrying a new generator. It was smaller than the one that burned out, but it worked well. He also brought tools, spare parts, and best of all, he brought along the instruction manual we had so often dreamed of, with the ever-cautious Apolonio had taken the trouble to photocopy. I'm talking about the 9th. The offensive was supposed to begin on the 12th, but there were last-minute changes. Early that Saturday, the 10th, Jonas showed up at the camp. He came to Morazon to take charge of our Francisco Sanchez Northeast Front, and he brought the news that the offensive would be moved up. "It's today," Jonas said. "This afternoon, the attacks will begin all over the country. Venceremos' first broadcast has to be today." That night, after 9 o'clock, we turned on the generator Mauricio had brought, revved up the Viking, plugged in the microphone, and made our debut on air with these words. "Brothers of El Salvador and the world, at this moment, Radio Venceremos, the voice of the FMLN, begins broadcasting from somewhere in El Salvador to accompany the Salvadoran people step by step in their march towards final victory over centuries of oppression." Right then, hundreds and thousands were fighting throughout the country in the streets of the capital, in Chalatenango, in San Vicente, in Usulután, in Cuscatlán, in La Paz, San Miguel, Cabañas. Barricades were going up, the army was being ambushed, roads were blockaded. In Santa Ana, a group of patriotic officers took control of the 2nd Infantry Brigade headquarters and joined the offensive. Quote, "Salvadorans, patriots, revolutionaries, lay and religious, civilian and military, the duty and privilege of achieving the liberation of our country has fallen to us. The days and hours to come will be decisive. We must harvest the fruit of the seed sown by our fallen brothers during 50 years of struggle. We carry on our shoulders a great responsibility. The future of our country depends on the discipline, skill, decisiveness, and heroism with which we carry out this great popular insurrection and offensive. The great battle beginning at this very moment will continue until total victory is achieved. We have a message for the soldiers and troops fighting on the side of the enemy. Does it make sense to sacrifice yourselves and die for a cause that is not your own, but that of a handful of rich men? The new society will guarantee a place for you. Abandon your posts. Don't kill your brothers. Join the struggle of the people. Don't fight against history. Ours is not a struggle for vengeance or reprisal. It is a struggle to achieve true peace, justice, and liberty. Our forces fight to build and not to destroy. Close ranks, everyone, and fight until we win or until we die. Commander Joaquin Villalobos, a message on Radio Venceremos, the 10th of January, 1981. Attilo finished talking and Rogelio began. From that day, 10th of January, from the very first program on Venceremos, there has been no conflict between Christianity and revolution. Quote, a people so tired of so much suffering has decided to rise up in arms to win its freedom. The members of this popular army are mostly Christians who have come to the defense of a people trapped in an unparalleled cavalry. Violence is legitimate when it is used to defend an entire people. Brothers, the people are right. Father Rogelio Ponceal, message on Radio Venceremos, January 10th, 1981. Reading from Rebel Radio. It's a compilation of different stories in the voice of those who wrote them and lived them. Stories called Shio and His Brothers. At night, he'd put on a brown sweater that covered his hands, and he'd lie there, curled up, sleeping on a bench. He looked more like a hairy little rat than a child, one of the thousands of orphans left by this war. When I started at Venceremos, Shio was barely 13. Leti trained him as a radio operator and then brought him to the station to help with the monitoring. Pale, short, his eyes clear and clean, the kid had only been able to reach first grade. At the station, he learned about everything, from debating politics to falling in love, and he cheered all us up. Shio became the camp mascot, always happy, always willing. Every day, he had a new story or a new joke. There were times when we saw him as a child, other times as just another member of the Venceremos team. His work would get criticized like everyone else's, but he never took any of it badly. He'd even laugh at his mistakes, and if he was eating a mango, he'd give you half so he wouldn't have to eat alone. Years before, when nobody imagined he would join the Venceremos staff someday, Santiago did a striking interview with him. It must be in the archive somewhere. What's your name? Lucio Vasquez, but they call me Shio. Where are you from? Osicala. And your family? My family is all split up. Two of my brothers died in the massacre the Cuillos committed during the demonstration in El San Salvador. We never saw them again because they were buried in El Rosario Cemetery. We heard that on KL. How did your mother take it? My mother told us to cry, but not to lose faith. That's the way the struggle is. Where is she now? The Cuillos killed her last year. I was with my brother, Parajillo, and we were bringing the calf in. It was about prayer time and getting dark when we heard the shots. The two of us took off for the house. When we got there, the Cuillos had already left. My mother was dead, and my sister too. My mother was on a bench leaning to one side with her head full of blood. My sister was in the hammock, her head blown open, with another pool of blood. We were alone because my father and the others had fled days before. The army was looking for them. So Pajarillo and I cleaned up the blood, and we lay them down in the beds. Did you ever find out who did it? They came with a sergeant from Gotera. Where did you go after that? After that, everybody left the villages because they were killing off whole families. Crowds of people went to the refugee camp with the few possessions they could carry. I went with them, but halfway there I decided to turn back. Why? I didn't want to go. When they noticed I wasn't there, they were already far away. What are you going to do now? I'll go to elementary school. Maybe I'll learn something. How old are you? 9. Interview broadcast on Radio Venceremos, June 25th, 1981. Gio had 8 siblings. 2 of them were killed in the capital at a demonstration. Another named Hubert was killed at the Battle of Moscarón. One more was killed somewhere else, I can't remember where. His mother and oldest sister were murdered by the army. The only ones he had left were his 2 little sisters and his last remaining brother, Pajarillo, who was his best friend. Years ago, Gio and Pajarillo were the announcers when the school children took over the radio for the day. Pajarillo sent him letters, messages, and Gio always wrote back. Pajarillo was the leader of a guerrilla unit in Jocoetique, a fair way away from Venceremos. In 87, after an all-night march, we reached Volcancillo de Joaquite. Someone came, I don't know who, and told Gio, Pajarillo's dead. He fell in combat yesterday. It devastated the kid. He didn't eat that afternoon, wouldn't speak to anyone, stayed up the whole night. We didn't know what to do. We'd never seen him sad. He was the one who cheered up the whole camp. What can you say in a case like that? My heartfelt condolences. I was writing something for the radio, and I watched him from a few meters away, sitting on a log, alone, hanging his head, scratching doodles in the dirt. Then Martin, another teenage fighter a little older than Gio, came over. He stood there watching him. Then, with a tenderness I'd never seen before, he said, "Don't be scared, Gio. I'm your brother, too." Gio looked up and he smiled. Become a Guerrilla in 20 Easy Lessons from Rebel Radio. Our guerrillas, who are mostly country people, had to win support in the cities. Sure, we had a lot of urban commandos in San Miguel, San Salvador, Santa Ana, San Vicente, and all the saints of our not-so-saintly country. But we needed to recruit a lot more young people, and above all, we needed to teach them how to fight. Venceremos should train them, Commander Chico suggested. Like a radio school, but teaching people how to use homemade weapons. A guerrilla correspondence course? Call it whatever you like. We began working on the format. I remembered something we came across in Morazan, the Costa Rican almanac called A School for All. Even in the most unlikely hut, you'd always find that almanac. One of the things we'd do whenever we took over a town was to collect books from the libraries and town halls to give to schools in the countryside. I always picked up copies of that almanac, but we could never keep up with the demand. Even later on, when we started setting up mobile libraries all over the front to support our literacy efforts, one of the most popular books was A School for All. Well, I thought if it's so successful, it must have something. I got hold of the collection, read a few of them, and discovered that the secret lay in the language. Simple, direct, accessible. That's where I found the inspiration for our little program. Let's learn how to use weapons. Armed guitar. Attention, guerrillas and clandestine militia. Attention, brother workers. Attention, students. Get ready to learn about using weapons. Get out your tape recorder or paper and pencil. We're about to begin. Compas, are you ready? In the first in our series, we're going to give you some ideas for getting in shape. We should exercise every day to improve our resistance and agility, after all. Resistance and agility. These are two principal objectives of getting into shape. If we have resistance and agility, we can walk long distances, run without getting out of breath, jump over walls, crawl under fences, use our popular weapons safely and skillfully. One important way of improving our agility and resistance is to play a sport every day. It could be soccer, basketball, karate, or swimming. Listen up. There are sports that you can practice legally on the field in your neighborhood without any problems. What's more, you can do your training as a team, or at least in groups of 2, outside, without having to hide. Training as a team, you'll be able to keep going when you're tired and encourage each other so that no one gets left behind. Everyone can play sports. Only you will know that you are training for combat. In our training programs, we're going to include the following exercises: jogging and running, knee bends, sit-ups, push-ups. These are the main ones, but remember that any exercise is good. And this is going to be your slogan. While you're jogging, repeat it in your mind. We're training to win. 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 From the radio and the almanac. I got the trick of asking questions at the end of every episode to leave the guerrilla apprentices with work to do from one day to the next and to get them to write down a few things they shouldn't forget. Our next installment will be on firearms, small arms, rifles, assault weapons. What is caliber? What are munitions? It's a good idea to clip pictures of different kinds of weapons from newspapers and magazines. It will be useful in our next lesson. You can also watch gringo police shows on television. Besides seeing how stupid they are, you can look at all sorts of arms and watch the ways of advancing, which we studied today. And one final recommendation. Watch the cuilos in the street. Take a look at the soldiers, at their rifles, their equipment, their uniforms. Those details will be very useful later. Now, you're observing the arms in the hands of our enemies. Tomorrow, you're going to take them for yourselves. From the third lesson on, we start explaining how to make and use homemade weaponry. Blunt weapons, firebombs, explosives, homemade gunpowder, Molotov cocktails, shooting stances, camouflage in the country and the city. All in all, an entire course. We even included the biblical weapon of David, which is quite common among our campesinos. It's difficult, not to say impossible, to do a military training program over the radio. The real training of urban commandos was done in person on the spot. Even though we did teach things, these little programs were more to keep our comrades company, so they would feel like they were part of something. They helped motivate people to use the simplest of weapons, which is how the FMLN was built. As we said before, there are different uses for homemade weaponry in street combat. With a mechanic sledgehammer, we can break the padlocks that hold back the people's rebellion. With workers' picks and shovels, we can dig trenches to detain enemy tanks. Don't forget, compañeros, when the revolutionary movement took up armed struggle as the just and correct path to power, the first small arms, pistols and revolvers, were recovered from the enemy using shovels, stones, and knives. That's how we began to arm ourselves. With sharp weapons, we recovered small arms. With small arms, we recovered larger weapons. The guerrilla army didn't start out with rifles or artillery or machine guns like we have today. In the beginning, it was blunt and sharp weapons that launched the struggle. In the great street battles that are approaching, these weapons will play an important role, once more, as part of homemade weaponry. The episodes lasted 15 minutes and went on air every day. For each new weapon, we played the appropriate sound effect: explosions, gunshots, rifles being cocked, and guerrilla marches. Teenagers in the cities loved it. They asked us to repeat them, which doesn't happen very often on Venceremos. We'll be right back. We Shall Not Be Moved, The Spike is a Pipe Bomb, you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I'm going to continue reading from Rebel Radio, story of El Salvador's Radio Venceremos, which of course means we're going to win. Page 202. Is there time for love among the guerrillas? It should be the other way around. Could you possibly do this without love? No way. We love like crazy in the guerrilla camps. Love here is as common as bullets flying by, and there are good reasons for it. Going off into the mountains is a supreme act of rebellion for a young kid. By going against established society, he or she assumes a lot of responsibility from a young age. Responsibility about life, about death, about political decisions. They know that what they are doing will determine the future of the country, no matter whether we win or lose. We feel they are part of something so big that it can change the course of the entire country. Some do this more consciously than others, but everyone shares in this feeling of absolute rebelliousness. So what happens when you're 14 or 16 and you discover that you are in total control of your life and your actions? Who's going to tell you yes or no? Your father or older brother can't rule your life anymore. So you can live and love with incredible freedom. You break free of all the social conventions, all the prejudices, all the proper ages for doing one thing or another. You break free, and that liberates your capacity for love. Among the guerrillas, you're always in love with someone. You're always trying to get someone to fall in love with you. Always, day in, day out, there's someone waiting for you who wants to make love to you. This freedom we've won meets up with the oldest of traditions, and it's quite a mix. You see, all the moral crap about courtship, sin, and staying a virgin, and sleeping with somebody else, all that gets buried in this great act of rebellion. But the beautiful rite of love remains. The peasant way of being remains. The little birds in the corners of the page of the love letter. DJ Logic, The Project. One final story, which is kind of the one that made me want to read to you tonight about pirate radio. Although there is another story. Yeah, there's another one I want to read first, just real quick. Love Among the Guerrillas. There's a great book, and there's a longer story I want to read to you, but first, just this real quick one. This is Fermín Cienfuegos, delivered on Radio Venceremos in July 1989. He was one of the rebel leaders from one of the factions in the FMLN. Quote, another principle is the conviction that the right... I'm reading poorly here to this evening... Another principle is the conviction that the truth cannot be imposed, even when you are right. We should avoid all forms of indoctrination, reducing the truth to slogans, or hiding and manipulating it. At times, in order to do things the easy way, to save time, or through impatience, we have taken the misleading shortcut of indoctrination. But it is always more revolutionary to seek the truth by sharing, showing, and discovering through participation. That road is longer and more difficult, but it is the proper way. Whoever imposes and indoctrinates will not win. Victory only comes when people are convinced. Propaganda, democracy, and revolution. Who will be able to speak on Venceremos? Everyone except for the dead. If we're going to base our political model on pluralism, then we must also accept it in the realm of ideas. In our country, we want the culture of debate to prevail over the stupidity of censorship. We want to bring democracy to the microphones. Let Venceremos be the best and broadest form for all sectors of society and all political persuasions, right, left, and center. Listen and draw your own conclusions. If the others argue better than we do, they'll force us to deepen our analysis and formulate the FMLN's program better and more creatively. Our belief in political and ideological pluralism does not stem from the current fashion, even less from outside pressure. The enemy didn't force it on us, nor did our friends in other countries insist on it as a condition for our friendship. We believe in it. We believe that we've opened our eyes and seen that this whole process has been about. Those who have made this revolution are Christians and Marxists, social democrats and Christian democrats. All of them have made sacrifices, stuck their necks out, shot, and been shot at. They've all been part of the vanguard, not just the guerrillas. Quote, in a revolutionary model, freedom of expression is obviously a necessity if we are to maintain domestic equilibrium. The present context demands that we debate with the masses, that we teach them to reflect on and defend their long-term interests. This cannot be done without opposition or without knowing the adversary's point of view. Such a debate forces us to broaden and deepen our revolutionary position if we are to save it from ideological dogmatism and paralysis. The existence of a professional, critical, and independent media is fundamental if we are going to end the oligarchy's monopoly on the mass media without violating freedom of expression. Joaquin Villalobos, Prospects for Victory and the Revolutionary Project, March 1989. Venceremos was born with the war. It has accompanied an incredibly heroic struggle from the very first day and throughout 10 long years. Our meager equipment has been used to inform, debate, provide political orientation, even once as a strategic weapon with 8 sticks of dynamite inside. Now this same equipment has become the bargaining chip at the negotiating table. By the time this book comes out, we'll probably be set up in San Salvador. A democratic opening has to occur. We won the right to legal status by acting outside the law. Just like the Salvadoran people, our station has nowhere to go but the mountains to exercise our rights, to make our voice heard. I can already see myself doing interviews in Colonia Zacamil, taping short soap operas in the markets, opening our clandestine mics to the poor of the barrios. People who before had only Monsignor Romero's voice to speak for them will soon be able to speak for themselves. Let's listen to them. They have spent centuries waiting in line to have their say. I apologize for having read the last page of the book to you, but that last quote mentioned a radio transmitter being used as a weapon. And although it's a little long, I'm going to ask for your patience and read you a story called The Trojan Transmitter. After what happened at San Gerardo, we were more determined than ever to kill Monterosa. The people in the electronics workshop came up with some ideas, so did others. How about a letter with plastic explosives? No, hombre, said Etio. You're going to be the ones who get killed. You have to have special training to do that. A car bomb? Another mortar attack on the 3rd Brigade? More guile and less force. We need to study the guy's psychology. What's he like? An exhibitionist, said Luisa. Being such a show-off could get him in trouble. Exactly, Etio continued. How is Monterosa? What has Monterosa done since he came here? Who has he been after? The command post and Venceremos. What does he do when he leaves? He takes trophies. He took the model of Cacahuatique. He took the videos. Okay, he wants Venceremos, he'll get Venceremos. We're going to give it to him. What better souvenir of Morazon could he ask for? From that moment on, Atilo became a frequent visitor to Mauricio's workshop. They were cooking up something big. Besides repairing the 1,000 components of the radio communications network in the station, the workshop began experimenting with integrated circuits for explosives, radio-activated time detonators, radio triggers for mines, all that sort of thing. One afternoon, Mauricio came over with a damaged transmitter, a Kenwood from the old days. What's this? I asked. We're going to add another shortwave signal? We're going to add 8 sticks of dynamite, dummy. One day, a C-47, one of those enormous reconnaissance planes, flew over our zone and dropped several white boxes swinging from little toy parachutes as they drifted down to Earth. We were suspicious, since we had no idea what they were. Could they be placing microphones in our territory? Bacteriological warfare? Mauricio sent for the plastic boxes and opened one. Inside, he found a tiny atmospheric laboratory for flight information. With a little gadget that measured wind velocity, another for humidity, and an altimeter. "We've got to thank those gringos," said Mauricio. "They run a good home delivery service." The altimeter was a flexible disc that moved up or down according to atmospheric pressure. It had a needle that marked the altitude. "We'll use this to set up a secondary mechanism for the bomb." The bomb was to go inside the transmitter. It would be triggered by a remote control device like the ones you'd use to turn on a television set, except this one was more complicated. It worked on radio frequency. If the radio triggered for any reason, when the altimeter's little needle would complete the circuit when the transmitter was taken to a height of 300 meters and the bomb would go off by itself. And who's going to carry the helicopter up 300 meters? Monterosa in his helicopter. That was the plan. Leave the booby-trapped transmitter in a hiding place so it would look like we didn't want it to be seen, but not so well hidden that he couldn't find it. Then pray that the exhibitionist would arrive, discover it, and take the fake Venceremos with him. He takes off in his helicopter with the trophy and gets blown out of the air. "Isn't 8 sticks of dynamite a bit much, Mauricio?" "The rocks have to match the toad." "That's enough to knock down a 3-story building." "Better too much than not enough," Mauricio insisted. "Okay," said Atilo. "Now we just have to wait for an opportunity." October 18th arrived. We were on one of the ridges on Pericon Hill, near Periquin, where we had been peacefully camped for several months, but we could smell an operation coming. Suddenly, at about 10 in the morning, we started seeing helicopters pass overhead. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This time it was for real. 20 helicopters, the first big airborne assault on our front. "Pack everything up, but fast," shouted Ismael, the head of security. "They've got us pinpointed, right on such and such coordinates," the radio operator said. "Let's get the fuck out of here," we added. "They're going to fry us on this hill." "Wait, Atilo," ordered. "Now is our chance. Let's leave Venceremos here. And since they know where we are, they'll think we left it behind in the rush to escape. Abel, get it ready." Mauricio wasn't there. He'd gone off to repair our FM repeater in Huacteca. He and Jonas's brother, Abel, who was also a technician, were the only ones who knew how to connect up the charges and get the bomb ready, but the troops were already on the ground in Llano de Muerto, right nearby. The bombs were already falling. We had only seconds. Abel raced to the workshop where he kept the transmitter open with the 8 sticks of dynamite ready to be put in place. One compa stayed outside to warn him if the cuilos showed up. Abel started making electrical connections, and nervous as he was, he let 2 wires touch, and boom, they set off an explosion. Not the TNT, but the ones that activate the main charge. When we heard the bang, we ran over and found Abel with his midriff sliced open, still trying to connect up the wires. They carried Abel off in a hammock, with his belly all bloody, amid the roar of helicopters and the pandemonium as everyone tried to pull out. "El Jeje!" Abel screams. "Tell El Jeje!" The third technician, El Jeje, comes over, and Abel gives him the final instructions on how to activate the bomb. "Look, this is the frequency that it has to register, understand?" He said the number that only he knew, and then he passed out. Just like in the movies when the hero reveals where the treasure is buried just before he kicks the bucket. Abel didn't kick it, but he told El Jeje what he needed to know to take charge. "Now what?" "Now nothing. First we have to take care of Abel. Let's go." "What about the device? Take it with us. It'll work next time." It was almost noon when we started marching. We reached the road that runs from Huacteca to Arambala and crossed it in groups of 5, crouched over, our guns on automatic. It started to rain. We crossed the Sapo River in a downpour. In front of me was the mule carrying the infamous transmitter with the 8 sticks of dynamite, the present we didn't get to give the colonel. We marched for hours and hours until we reached a place they call Volcancillo. "We'll stay here," Atilo told us. "Go on air and tell Monterosa his operation has been a total failure." It was 5:45. We had 15 minutes to set up the radio, the real one. Open up the packs, take out the mixer, set up the recorder, align the link up, the generator, and the gasoline. Who has the cassette? Find a bit of table and a bit of roof because the downpour continued. El Jeje took the controls and we did the announcing, all of us huddled underneath, together against the cold, soaked to the skin, not having eaten, absolutely exhausted, but at 6 o'clock our tongues were lashing out at the army. We did an hour-long program. It was more shouting than anything else, for sure. Well, it wasn't quite the moment for pedagogical discourse, was it? What we wanted to do was insult them, and rub it in that they hadn't caught us, to maintain our good radio manners as we put on a musical bridge between swearing at them and cussing them out. Afterwards, we packed everything up again because we didn't know what fate held in store for us, and we crashed out under the mango trees. The next morning, Atilo said, "We can't go on carrying that bomb around. Let's hide it here. What can we do? Our plans got messed up. If we leave it now as bait, they won't bite. Back in Pericón, they would have, since we had to leave in such a hurry. But that we just left it by the side of the path? No one will swallow that one." We hid the bomb transmitter in Volcancillo and continued the march toward Guarabo Hill, which is more or less 5 kilometers towards Huateca, as the crow flies. It forms a triangle with El Mazote, which is about 5 kilometers away. From the heights, where we set up camp, you couldn't see Huateca, though you could see the hollow where the town lies and the church belfry. The command post, the Venceremos team, and the radio communications team set up shop. Another day went by, the third one of the operation. In the early morning of 21st October, Chiquito comes over and shakes me. "Wake up." "What's wrong?" "Write commentaries for Venceremos." "Write commentaries in the middle of the night?" "That's right. Start writing. About what?" "Anything at all, but it's got to be in your handwriting." On other occasions, the Quilos had found notebooks of ours, and they knew our handwriting. "What for?" "Stop whining. Write, and don't ask questions." I was lying, propped up on my elbow in my tent, filling up pages by flashlight when I heard noises outside. It was Mauricio, just coming back from somewhere, and Atilo in a big hurry. "Look, Mauricio, you go to Volcancillo and bring that thing back. We're going ahead with it. It's now or never." Later, I heard him speaking with Novo, the guide who was our unit. Novo is a campesino who looks like a lot like Ferabundo Martí, brown-skinned, mustache, with a big pistol and a rifle. "Look, Novo, Monterosa's time is up. He's going to pay for all he's done, God willing." As dawn broke, Atilo brought together the little team that would carry out the plan. "We're going to fake a battle, where someone gets wounded and we have to abandon the transmitter. Simple as that. Julio, you lead the security squad and carry the device. It's got a bomb inside. It's a booby trap. Get into a shooting match with a squadron of Quilos, and then shout out, 'Leave that shit behind. Get the wounded out.' Come on, let's hear it." "Leave that shit behind. Get the Quilos out. Get the wounded out," Julito Perica rehearsed. "Perfect, but you've got to make sure they hear you. Get close enough to them before you scream." "Then what?" "Take a rooster with you. Slit his throat and leave a trail of blood. Let them see the blood of the wounded. And then? Then, right then, and only when you're sure the Quilos are on your heels, get a little stick and push up this switch. Look, inside this little grate, you turn on the whole system. Make sure it's up, that it's on. Then leave the device on the path. Got it?" "Got it, Chief." "Adelia, come over here. You're going with them, too. When you run out of there, send this message over the radio. We've got trouble. We lost the package. What do we do?" "Repeat it." "We've got trouble. We lost the package. What do we do?" rehearsed the green-eyed radio operator. "Send the message clean, without any code. The operator on the other side will be ready. He'll answer, 'Don't talk to me here. Go on such and such a frequency.' So you go to that frequency and give him the same message, this time in code. Understand?" "But they know the code." "That's why we're using it. The Quilos computer will decipher the message right away. That's what we want. You send the message and then add, 'We've got a wounded man.' The other operator will respond, 'Forget about the package and pull out the wounded.'" Everything was meticulously planned so as not to arouse suspicion. Immediately, a report would be sent to the commanders of our more secret internal network, also in a code, in use for a long time. Atilo would communicate with Maria outside the country. He'd give the bad news and say that we'd have to figure out how to buy another transmitter and get it into the country. The point was to make the enemy's entire intelligence service absolutely convinced that they had finally captured Radio Venceremos. "Mauricio," Atilo concluded, "you take charge." The word he used was garantizar. It's a sacred word for us. The only excuse for failing to garantizar is to be dead. Everyone knew what they had to do, and Mauricio knew what everyone had to do. He took charge of the entire plan. Mauricio, Julito Perica, Adelia, and the security squad headed off. They reached the point where the Quilos were supposed to have been and found no one. It's not unusual for them. They don't report to their superiors that where they're supposed to be. But they don't really go that far, because they're afraid. Anyhow, our team had to go in closer to Huateca. At about 5 in the afternoon, they found the Quilos, and the show began. They shot back and forth a few times, and then came the shout, the rooster, the switch, and the message. From up on the hill, we could hear the gunfight. A minute later, Adelio's voice came over the communications radio. "Xylophone, potato, tango, Charlie, whiskey, Delta, stripes." "That's the message in code. Everything's going well." Now the green radios to hear what the enemy would say. Attila was pacing back and forth like a caged lion, and we were all chewing our nails. At long last, they were capturing us. Capturing Venceremos. It came an hour later, without code, and with the euphoria we'd never heard from them before. Witch's company of Fonseca Battalion reports that we've captured Venceremos. What? Repeat. We've captured Venceremos' equipment. There were 200 of them, but we beat the pants off them. Half a minute later. Fonseca Battalion commanding. Calling Charlie Carlos. Go ahead, Monterosa answers. I hear you, over. We've captured Radio Venceremos on a hill, of Tizate Hill, on the ridge, in the jurisdiction of Huateca at such and such coordinates. Wonderful, congratulations. Look, take that to Huateca and wait for orders. I'll be right there. They had it. We figured that they spent what was left of the afternoon comparing intelligence reports to see if it all checked out. Those of us who worked for the broadcasts were told we wouldn't go on the air that day. Never in 4 years of war had such a decision been taken. Today there will be no program. That night went on forever. The entire monitoring team spent it going back and forth over the dial waiting for the news. And at last it came. Newsflash. The army just reported that the clandestine Radio Venceremos was captured a few hours ago in Tizate, Huateca, after fierce combat. More details from our correspondent in San Miguel. We sat in a circle in the big canvas military tent where we all slept. Attilio was bursting, more excited than ever. He wasn't sleeping, so he started telling stories about when he was a student, about the boys in his barrio, Santa Anita in the capital, about when they'd watch the girls on the corner in high school, about the student struggles in 1970, about the first urban guerrilla cells, about Rafael Arzabala, the ERP's first leader who was killed in combat in 75. If Lito had lived, it was late. People deserted him one by one, and eventually I gave in too and went off to sleep. I can't remember what other stories Attilio told that night. The next morning, the Voice of America, after its usual and unpleasant, "This following program is in Spanish," announced its top story. After so many days of uninterrupted broadcast, Radio Venceremos has stopped transmitting. The Salvadoran army reports that the clandestine station was captured in San Salvador, all the stations, YSU, KL, Sonora, were giving the story big play, and of course we were getting coded messages from other organizations, from alarmed friends. "We'll explain later," was our only response. Dicho, who was on another mission, called up immediately. "What the fuck? What do you mean we lost the station?" "We'll explain later." The uproar was growing. The story became more and more triumphant. One station even put out a news flash that the Venceremos announcers had been captured. "Did you hear?" said Butterfly, dumbstruck by the news, as she came up to Santiago, Marvel and me. "What?" "The announcers." "But we're the announcers. You're Venceremos' announcer. Monterosa's the one who's going to get it." But he didn't show. Monterosa gave no sign of life. Abraham's Beatles, the boys on the intelligence team who hadn't slept a wink all night, continued on alert in case there was a report of a helicopter coming to pick up the transmitter. Nothing. All afternoon. Nothing. "We'll explain later" was becoming an awful lot later, and the situation was turning against us. The fighters, demoralized, were sitting by the radio, fixed on our frequency, hearing nothing, hoping that we'd come on the air to tell them this disaster wasn't true. Their station. Their station captured. That's when I realized how much Venceremos meant to them, and what's meant by the audience empathy you read about. Messages were pouring in, not only from the war fronts, but from journalists, allies, people overseas. Jesus, that second night of silence nearly drove us mad. October 23rd. We woke to the same news and the same tension. Attilio paced back and forth. He carried a stick and kept slapping it on the palm of his hand. He stopped next to Abraham. "What do you think? Where have they got it?" "They've got it in the town hall in Huateca. Where else?" "What would happen if we set it off right now?" "Well, will it work in the helicopter?" "Let's hope so, hombre. It'll work. If it doesn't, we're the biggest jerks in the world. We're handing them a victory they didn't get in Pericón. Even if what they picked up isn't the real thing, who's going to believe it when they show off the device and we've stopped broadcasting? Who's going to explain that it was all a misunderstanding, a booby trap that trapped us?" Just then, a helicopter appears. We pick up a helicopter's radio. It's 9 in the morning. "Who is it?" "I don't know," says Abraham. "He hasn't identified himself." "Then it must be Monterosa. He's the only one who is careful never to identify himself." No, it's not him, a young radio operator butts in. Why not? Says Attilo impatiently. It isn't him, the kid insists. I know the voice of Monterosa's pilot. That's not him. Do you have it recorded? Yep, listen. They sit down and listen to the tape and agree. It isn't him. But suppose it is. Let's go up above. Attilio, the commanders, and the rest of us climbed uphill a few meters to the highest point where the radio operators were set up for strategic communications. From there, we had a panoramic view of the valley, with Huateca in the distance. Mauricio carried the remote control, the radio detonator, and Osege had the aerial, a directional aerial that the technicians built just for this operation. The helicopter comes into view, lands in Huateca, stays there a few minutes. It takes off, and when it starts back towards San Miguel, the arguments begin. Suppose we fire, and it isn't it? And if we don't fire, and it is? Since the kid insisted that it wasn't him, they believed him and didn't shoot. The little guy was right, because later on we learned that the helicopter was carrying medical personnel who'd gone in to pick up a wounded man. At noon, Radio Sonora in the capital announced an interview with Lieutenant Colonel Domingo Monterosa Barrios. We leapt from our posts and surrounded the radio. How's the operation north of the Tatrola River going, Colonel Monterosa? Well, what we're doing is not just any old operation. It's a region-wide action, and it's going well. How long do you think the operation will last? We're going in to stay. As I said, this time it's different. We're not going to leave like the other times. What's the story on Venceremos? It's true. We've captured Radio Venceremos. I'd like to say that the myth of Morazón is over. We've given the witches of the Fonseca Battalion, who achieved this feat, a well-deserved one-month furlough. This afternoon at 4 o'clock, I've asked the national press and foreign correspondents to come to the 3rd Infantry Brigade in San Miguel, where I will show them the radio personally. He was coming. He had come to pick up his trophy. Or would he send someone else to Huateca to get it? Damn. We were in an agony of enthusiasm and nerves. The whole camp was counting the minutes on their fingers, counting the seconds. No one could even think about eating. Everyone was watching the sky, the clouds, just waiting to catch sight of him. At about 2 o'clock, we picked up a helicopter approaching. Now that one is Monterosa's pilot, said the kid, same as before. Did he actually say so? Atilo asked. No, he didn't say so, but it's his voice. The kid's right, Abraham interrupted. I'll put my balls on an anvil, that's him. The helicopter was on its way. From our hill, we watched it all like a big movie screen. We saw the helicopter approach, hover, settle down, and disappear into the town. Of Huateca, as I said, we could only see the church belfry. The helicopter flew up over Huateca. Is Monterosa on it? Atilo asked. I don't know, the radio operator answered. They haven't said so, but it's his pilot. Where the dog goes, so goes the master. Get everyone ready. There was Elsege, with his aerial all lined up, Mauricio looking a few years younger, Atilo truly thrilled, Chiquito flushed with tension, everyone feverish with the excitement of that decisive moment. The helicopter came towards us. Fire, Mauricio orders, fire! Mauricio pushes the button of the radio detonator, he pushes it again, and nothing happens. Fire, I tell you, Atilo screams. JJ, aim it right, fire! Elsege, holding his aerial as if it were a rocket launcher, following the point in the sky. Mauricio pushing the button so hard he nearly breaks the switch, but the helicopter peacefully continues its course. The silence that followed was a son of a bitch. Mauricio aged 1,000 years. Elsege wanted to hang himself from the highest tree. It was Chiquito who said it. We blew it. Mauricio started checking the remote control to see if it was the circuit or the connection to the aerial or what it was that had failed. His hands were shaking. Wait, Mauricio, Atilo said. Isn't there a failsafe? Yeah. How high is that bird now? Over 3,300 meters. And the altimeter? I don't know. It didn't work either. Puta, was the last thing Atilo said, and he stalked off. Chiquito, demoralized, slumped down in some tall grass. Julito Perica buried his face in his hands. I remember old Herman, our political officer, going off towards the kitchen. At Wakes, they serve coffee. Anyone want coffee? Right then, Atilo jumps up if he had springs in his butt. Mauricio, come here. The aged, ruined technician comes over, dragging his feet. Mauricio, what would happen if we had a radio operator in Huateca now, and we wanted to talk to him? Could we establish communications with him? It would be possible from a height. If he climbed up in the church belfry, because the town is down in that hollow boxed in, the radio waves travel in a straight line. It's difficult. Yeah. The transmitter is still in Huateca, Atilo shouts. That's the problem. They haven't taken it out of Huaseca. Then they must have discovered the bomb. No, hombre, how could they have discovered it? They would have reported that over the radio. So why didn't it blow up on the ground, says Julito. That's why, because it can't. There's no direct line. Monterosa is still in Huateca. Atilo goes over and shakes Chiquito. Chiquito, it doesn't work because the device is still there. And I'm still here. Don't be a crybaby. Come on, get up. While Atilo is explaining and arguing, we hear the sound of another helicopter approaching from San Miguel. It's 4:15. You see? There he is. Let's go, Mauricio. Get going. Check the cables. JJ! Everyone on their feet again, and the excitement begins all over. When the helicopter calls in, our operator confirms it. That's Monterosa's bird. Same pilot. Speculation begins. Didn't he come on the first flight? Or did he come and not go? Where is he, on the ground or in the air? One thing for sure, his helicopter was making its approach. It landed again in Huateca. Those minutes, while the helicopter was down and we couldn't see it. Atilo is a very tall man and Chiquito is like his name, tiny. There were two chiefs, big and small, each with his eyes on Huateca. Atilo didn't lower his binoculars, even for a second. Another kid comes over, one of Abraham's radio announcers, who are busy scanning everything and the 7 communication radios we captured from the enemy. From the 3rd Brigade, they're telling Monterosa that the press is all waiting for him. So he is in Huateca, Atilo screams. Now his time has come. The helicopter starts climbing into the blue sky. It starts moving horizontally. When we have it in front of us, exactly in front of us, Atilo orders, Mauricio, fire. As soon as he says it, I see a ball of fire, a huge ball of fire that sends showers of flames out all sides. Have you ever heard the Brazilian soccer team score a goal in Maracanã Stadium? That's what the yelling was like. Chiquito wrapped his arms around Atilo. Mauricio and Achaje were hugging each other. The radio operators, the kids, everyone in the command post in one big cheer, hugging and kissing each other like at a wedding. Long live Morazon! Long live the FMLN! Herman climbed downstairs, downhill, to the rest of the camp, waiting in the kitchen, since everyone couldn't fit above. And from the kitchen, another uproar arose. Silence, says Abraham. Shut up. Have they said it yet? They haven't said anything. You see, with all this cheering, all we knew was that a helicopter had been downed. We had to confirm that Monterosa was on board. We were all sure, but the devil has his devilish ways. Once again, it was quiet, as everyone waited by the green radios to hear what the enemy would say. About 20 minutes later, the voice of the head of the battalion in Huateca requested communication with the 3rd Brigade in San Miguel. Send me a bird immediately. We just sent one. What happened? Look, this is an emergency. Send me a bird immediately. What sort of emergency? We've had problems with the bird you just sent. Where was Charlie Carlos traveling? Affirmative. Hurry. Affirmative. Again, we started yelling and screaming. A goal scored in the Stadium of the World. Our guerrilla camp went wild. Atilo then called Leti, who was in charge of communications on the front. Send a message to all the stations that we just got Domingo Monterosa, the murderer. His helicopter fell right between Huateca and El Mazote, where he had committed one of his worst crimes. He and his angels of death, as he liked to call his Atacal battalion, went to El Mazote. He gave the order to machine gun the very people he had asked to congregate in the church. He authorized the rapes. He laughed at the children stuck with bayonets and thrown into the ovens alive. He did all of that. In December of 81 alone, 1,000 innocent people were murdered, very close to where he had just been blown to pieces in his helicopter, at 4:15 in the afternoon of that judgment day, October 23rd, 1984. Atilo ran over to the Strategic Communications Center to talk with Maria overseas. We got Monterosa. Are you serious? Absolutely. We've got to telephone the stations here and tell them that Venceremos will go on the air right now at 6 o'clock. Tell them we have a surprise for the journalists who are still waiting for Monterosa at the 3rd Brigade in San Miguel. Is it confirmed? Absolutely confirmed. So the colonel didn't read the story of the Trojan horse in time. That's right, the Trojan horse. Never had an ancient legend of war seemed on target. In a few minutes we learned that it wasn't only Monterosa. Other Trojans were with him. So Charlie Carlos was there? Affirmative, that's right. Listen, and my Charlie too? Asked the one from the Atacal battalion. Affirmative, your Charlie was there. On board the helicopter, were Major Armando Azmitia, Domingo Monterosa's assistant and successor, who took over at Atacal Battalion when his boss was promoted. Azmitia, the best hope of the Salvadoran army, considered by many to be just like Monterosa, only better. "Listen, was my Charlie there too?" asked the one from Gotera. "Affirmative. What? Calito too? Lieutenant Colonel Herson Calito, well-known bastard, commander of the military detachment number 4? And my Charlie?" another asks, and then another. All the strategic commanders of the Torola 4 operation were dead. The 6 heads of battalions, Monterosa's entire high command, the ones he had trained, his key men in that crazy operation he and the gringos had designed. He'd call them all to come to Huateca to witness the unveiling of the captured Venceremos. He'd also invited a military priest to congratulate the soldiers and bless their victory. He'd brought along a journalist from Coprefa, a cameraman and a sound man to film the moment when Monterosa personally helped carry the transmitter bomb into the helicopter. They and their lieutenant colonel, the gringos Rambo and El Salvador, were all dead. The only one who missed the appointment was James Steele, head of the U.S. advisors who ran the Torola 4 operation along with Monterosa. Not even the devil wanted to have him. "Set up Venceremos. We've got to go on the air at 6 on the dot." I'll never forget that broadcast. Even though it was October and the rainy season, the sky in Morazon was choked with stars. 1,000 of them had names. "We declare this 23rd day of October a day of vindication for the patriotic martyrs murdered in El Mazote, La Joya, Los Torriles, Pozo Honda, and all the hamlets and villages of Morazon, where this executioner massacred so many innocent lives. This is Radio Venceremos, indestructible, like our people." When the program was over, Atio called us all together. "Now, get the band, and let's have a big party. We aren't going to celebrate the death of a man. But we are going to celebrate the people who will live now that he's gone." You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1, and forgive me for reading you such a long story, but the story of El Salvador's Radio Venceremos is an interesting one for all us pirates, and I hope for all you pirates out there listening to 101.1 FM and at freakradio.org. That was some Boards of Canada in the background. This program's called Self-Defense 101, and although I don't do any programs on training you how to do homemade weapons, I thought that some of those stories were interesting. So, again, that's a book called Radio Rebelde, or Rebel Radio, rather. And it's kind of compiled. It's got some photos and a map and stuff. Is translated by Mark Fried, and it's compiled by Jose Ignacio Lopez Vigil. And the edition I'm looking at is from Curbstone Press, and I highly recommend it as a read about clandestine radio and the possibilities.